this episode of Newt's World, we have a really fascinating series of questions and comments from the members of our inner circle. I think you're going to find it very fascinating, and you're going to find we cover the waterfront, a wide range of issues and topics. I have to say, this is one of those weeks where there are so many different things going on that it's a little hard to focus in. Now, my personal favorite was the announcement that Health and Human Services, in their annual budget report, had given up on the word mother and instead had decided they'd be referred to as birthing people, which struck me at least, and I'll be curious to get your reactions, as somewhere between nuts and you can't make this stuff up. But when he was pushed about it, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, former Congressman Becerra, couldn't defend it, didn't try to defend it, knew that it was sort of goofy, but that it's what the left wanted. And I actually have asked several of our researchers to pull together the background, various academic papers on why it's important that we not feminize being a mother, and instead that a mother be a gender-neutral term, like birthing persons. Now, I think this is politically insane for the Democrats. I'm going to raise the question, once we get all of our research done, do they really want to change Mother's Day to Birthing Persons Day? Do they really think this is where the American people are? But it's just part of a pattern. It's the same pattern which has them in a very, very dangerous way, trying to brainwash the U.S. military. And this is one that isn't just funny. This is a real threat to our national survival. And all of you should look at what the Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, Harris team is trying to do, because it is going to tear the military apart. I can't imagine a more dangerous pattern than to have a country as big as ours, as central as ours, faced with leadership that has no clue how much damage they're doing to the morale and the unit integrity and the commitment of the young men and women who they are putting through this sort of brainwashing process. It's really, I think, very, very dangerous. I sense, and I'll be curious to see if you agree, that the momentum towards an ultra-left America has slowed down some, that they're beginning to find, not just with Senator Manchin from West Virginia, but with a number of House and Senate members, they're beginning to run into sort of the limits of how far they can take the country on spending, on centralized control, on a whole range of issues. So I think that's likely to lead in the next few months to some significant changes. I just sent out this morning Kevin McCarthy's report to the Republican House members. They've been gone for 3 weeks. This is all part of a rope-a-dope strategy by Pelosi to just keep them away. I mean, it's very hard to plot and to gain momentum and to talk with each other if you're sent home for 3 weeks at a time. And this is a deliberate strategy by the Democrats, which I think will blow up on them. But McCarthy's reaction was to write a very good paper on what's happening, what we have to do. Kevin McCarthy's, I think, very largely correct interpretation of where we are. I don't know which was more cringeworthy, watching Kamala Harris laugh as she tried to explain that while she hadn't been to the border with Mexico and Guatemala, she hadn't been to the border with Europe either. You have to wonder what kind of a San Francisco cuckoo comes up with this stuff. But I think more cringeworthy and more scary, frankly, was Biden's performance in Europe. When 3 times in a row he got Libya wrong and confused Libya with Syria, and I think he began to embarrass the Europeans who were there. And then immediately after Boris Johnson had introduced the president of South Africa, you had President Biden reintroduce a guy who had just been introduced, and you had all of the various presidents and prime ministers, all of them were laughing at the American president because he so clearly out of it. I mean, didn't know what he was talking about. Whether that's because there was too much travel and not enough rest, whether it's because he just doesn't pay any attention, or whether it's because, you know, he thinks it doesn't matter. He's already president, so if he screws up, nothing's going to change. But I thought it was among the worst performances by a brand new American president. Remember, this is your moment to shine on the stage, to prove you know what you're doing, to go out there and make an impact. Joe Biden is here and he's going to fix things. Well, it was kind of like Joe Biden was on a retirement home tour of Europe. I think it was frightening. A good friend of mine who has ties very high in some European countries said that the prime minister of one of the countries said to him that they found Biden's performance genuinely frightening because it was hard to believe that an American president could be that much out of touch with reality. I think on the domestic side, the only real question in my mind is whether the coming inflation is a temporary process of catching up because there's too much money in the system and we're going to have to just sort of absorb it, which would lead to, you know, 4, 5, 6% inflation, but for a brief period. Or whether, in fact, with the sheer volume of cash, you're beginning to get a real inflationary spiral. I don't know which yet. I have the bias of my childhood because I got elected to Congress as Jimmy Carter was destroying the currency. And so my first bias would be that these guys don't know what they're doing and that they're likely to end up, because they're so desperate to spend money, that they're likely to end up creating dramatically more inflation. But that may not be the case. I think I certainly wouldn't urge anyone to invest based on a guaranteed wave of inflation. It's very possible. It may happen. And certainly at the present time, there seem to be some pretty dangerous indicators that it's coming down the road. On the Republican side, I think we continue to expand. I don't know how many of you noticed that we had 3 sheriffs who switched parties and became Republican in the last couple of weeks. We've had several state legislators who switched parties and become Republicans. There's a nice, healthy, steady growth rate towards the GOP. The election in Virginia is going to be a big deal. The Republicans have nominated and Glenn Youngkin, a very, very good business leader who had been the co-leader of the Carlyle Group, which is the most successful business investing group in Washington, D.C. He's attractive. He's relatively young. He's a remarkable contrast with what we're getting out of Terry McAuliffe. And look, McAuliffe's a good guy. I've known McAuliffe for years. He tells great stories. He's done virtually everything he can in politics. He wrote a book one time about having to wrestle an alligator because the Seminole Indians told him they'd give money to Jimmy Carter if he would get in the pit with the alligator. So he did. He's kind of a good old boy, interesting guy. On the other hand, he's also a career politician who behaves like a career politician. And I think this might be a year. The margin between them is very close. It's about 2 percentage points. And I think that that's much closer than you would expect this early in a race in which Youngkin has never run for office before. And on the other hand, you have McAuliffe, who's 100% known statewide. So that's a race to pay attention to.
Michael wants to know, what's your take on Joe Manchin? And do you think that there's any chance of persuading him to change parties?
Great questions. I was very, very close to Governor Zell Miller, who was a mountain Democrat, a lot like Joe Manchin. And Miller was sickened by how radical left the Democratic caucus was. Actually invited me over to breakfast one morning. He wanted me to know that all those years when I would come home and report on how bad the Democrats in Washington were, he never believed me. But then now that he was there, it was much worse than I had said. He just wanted to apologize. And we'd had a great friendship going back to 1964 when he was a young, ambitious state legislator and I was managing my first campaign. So we'd had a great friendship. And I asked him one day, I said, look, you no longer caucus with him. You don't go to their meetings. Why don't you switch? And he said, you know, the Democratic Party was very good to me. And it basically fed my family for my whole life. And I'm just not going to desert it. And it was just sort of a deep personal feeling on Miller's part. I don't know if that's where Manchin's coming from. Miller was a Marine and a very tough guy. Manchin was a football player in high school and college, a star athlete. Manchin's big physically, Miller was not. I've always thought with Joe, Joe and I went to several Right to Life masses at the Basilica over the years and would sit next to each other. I always had the sense that this is a guy who's very sincere and very comfortable with himself. I think Manchin would be, on many issues, happier as a Republican. But on the other hand, I think in some ways, he really grew up as a mountain Democrat. And on some issues, he'd be very uncomfortable. I think what he's done has taken more courage than it would have taken had he gone off and just switched parties. Because that means he gets up every morning, goes to work, walks down the hall, goes past 49 Senate Democrats and the vice president, who are all mad at him, and goes past 50 Republicans, who all kind of wish he'd come over. And he's his own guy. And I think it's a classically American story.
And Marietta asks, when illegal immigrants are bused to states across America, is it with the state's permission? And if not, why can't the state bus them back across the border?
I'm not a lawyer, so my hunch is that under the Interstate Commerce Clause, states cannot set up individual permits or passports. If they could find a legitimate public policy reason for a class of people, they might be able to do it. But I think that only the federal government can regulate interstate commerce. That was a pretty big decision in the Constitutional Convention and was a key part of our becoming a country.
Ken asks, what can be done to get the poor souls sitting in jail since January 6th out?
Well, I think part of it is just to get people to pay attention and raise the question. I don't understand this double standard where you can be on video burning down a building. You can be beating somebody up. For example, a retired police captain in St. Louis was killed, being beaten up, trying to protect his neighbors. And somehow that doesn't rise to the same standard. This has become kind of very, very political and very much manipulated by the left-wing judiciary and the left-wing police in the Capitol. I am told, I don't have proof, but I'm told that there is a person who offered to put up $15 million bail and couldn't get it, which if you remember that Kamala Harris was raising money to help bail out people in Minneapolis while there were real riots underway. It makes you wonder about the huge double standard.
Charles wants to know if you think that the Southern District of New York will time their tax indictment of Trump to run at the same time that the Arizona audits come out.
I think it's unlikely. And I think that if you have a prosecutor who knows what he or she is doing, and they get to go into a grand jury, and they get to present their side of the case. Remember, that's all that an indictment is. That means that the prosecutor has come in and has given you their version. So generally speaking, you can indict, somebody once said, you could indict a large sandwich just because the grand jury is going to listen to the prosecutor. Now, where the balance shifts, of course, is when you get into the court, and now it's a Pettit jury, not a grand jury, and now the burden shifts to beyond reasonable doubt. And most good prosecutors are very careful not to carry their case beyond reasonable doubt because they know they'll lose it. Then they'll look foolish. I can also tell you that you get into these gigantic, complex tax cases where you have a guy like Trump who probably had, I don't know, 30, 50, 100 different companies all intertwined, and they had various sundry partnerships and cross contracts and so forth. Those things, just walking the jury through them can be a nightmare. So it'll be interesting to watch. My guess is, in the end, Trump will be fine. He's been doing this for a lifetime. You know, this is not a guy who backs down easily. It's not a guy who gives up. And it's not a guy who is stupid. He didn't make all that money, all those billions of dollars, by being stupid.
Jane listens to Newt's World, and she has a question regarding your podcast interview with Wawa Nu, which she found fascinating. She asks, when nations like Burma gain independence from Britain, and given the absolutely horrific, brutal attacks against fellow humans, wouldn't it have been better for Burma to remain a colonial nation under Britain and, quote, managed, educated until it had some sort of true democracy?
You know, I think that's a great question to go out and have a beer and debate. But the premise of it, that getting the right education leads to civilization, was so tragically destroyed by the Nazi Germans, who had arguably the best educated country in Europe. And they produced a nightmare of unending proportions. And so you really come down to whether or not you agree with our founding fathers that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if we do, then you have to take the risk. People will make mistakes, but it will be their mistakes. They will have problems, but it will be their problems. And in a sense, that's what freedom's all about.
Yeah, Newt, I listened to your podcast back when COVID started, and you had a very interesting series interviewing doctors. I'm curious if you might revisit those topics and see what developments have occurred.
I'm glad you raised that, because I actually think we had a package. The interviews we did back then, and sort of do a remembering COVID series, because I remember that we had Fauci on, and he was just completely wrong. So I think there'd be a lot we'd learn from going back and listening to what the so-called experts told us. This is really a gigantic mess. People don't understand how big a mess it is, because we're all so tired. We're all so drowning in the day-to-day stuff. But I think one study suggested we may have lost as much as one half of all the money that was spent on stimulus may have been stolen. One half. In California alone, that might be $50 billion. Well, nobody's done any kind of serious look at this stuff. We've clearly had scientists who were playing political science. They weren't playing biological science. So there's a lot there to be investigated. You clearly had some states that were just killing machines. I mean, what Cuomo did to the senior citizens of New York is just extraordinary, and there's a fair chance you'll get away with it.
I am in Collier County, Florida, which is considered conservative. And our school board just passed a very woke ELA books. They say they don't see any CRT in them. I looked at the books myself. I saw quite a bit. So at first I think they don't know what it is, but then I think they want it. So anyway, now when I heard that a school district in New Jersey just decided to do away with holiday names on their school calendar, I get nervous. Is this going to trickle down here? I know people say, well, you've got to vote these guys off the board. Then we do, but they say all the right things, and then they get up there, and then they vote another way. I'm nervous.
You should be nervous. And you should keep defeating them till you get to people who keep their word. It's not an easy solution, but winning the American Revolution wasn't that easy either. And I think it's appalling how bad the corruption mentally of the entire education establishment, including many of the school board members. So I think you simply have to take them head on. There have been a number of elections recently where the pro-American side has won with 70% or more, and the anti-American left has lost pretty decisively. So I think it is possible.
Shouldn't the GOP push for an end to the inflation tax by introducing an indexing capital gains for inflation bill? Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it would also make sense to tie that directly to your 401k and your other retirement funds. So part of what happened in the 1960s and early 1970s was as people got pushed up by inflation, they were pushed into higher and higher tax brackets. And all of a sudden, middle class people found they couldn't afford to keep their house, they couldn't afford to keep their savings. So I think that's a good idea. Thank you to the members of my Inner Circle Club. You can learn more about the Inner Circle and sign up at newtsinnercircle.com. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.